Welcome to The Out Agenda, coming to you on archive.kpfk.org. I'm Rita Gonzalez.
And I'm Ralph Ratterbaugh. This week on the show, we're going to be talking with writer, director, actress Romy Nordlinger about her new one-woman show, The Garden of Allah, the Allah Nazimova story. I don't have her name down perfect, but we're going to have Romy give us the exact pronunciation of that, Rita.
Well, it sounded pretty close. I never heard this this person. I'm curious to know about her. And
me too. She was a big movie star.
Yeah, and I missed it. Well, of course, I wasn't in those days, but you know, you remember certain movie stars from that era, but I did not know her. So I am looking forward to this interview. But before that, I went on vacation. You went on vacation.
Oh, yeah, Rita. You did a little cruising.
Yeah. And then
up and down the coast.
Oh, it was fun. It was beautiful weather. You just sit out there in the ocean and it just no news, no nothing. And then I come back all happy, relaxed. And then you find out that the Supreme Court is just going crazy on us.
Oh, they're going conservative on us. Boy.
Oh, they're just see the line. It's so divided.
Action, also the woman that was suing for something that she didn't even have to deal with. She was going to become a web designer, and she wanted to make sure, I guess, ahead of time that she didn't have to do any gay people's website.
For their weddings or anything. And no one had ever went to her asking to create a website. So it was so fictitious that she did this. And then it's just one thing after another, and you could see how divided. You have three here. We got to have someone on to talk about this again, because I don't understand. I mean, they've talked about adding more jurors to this, the Supreme Court, but that doesn't change anything. Adding more people, because you could still have more of this side and more of that side. I would like to see term limits. I mean, they should be out. Because some of them have been caught doing things that were not quite appropriate with the monies that taking
Clarence
money
Thomas
or
has been
gifts.
On there for 30 years. It's time to retire.
Yeah, they should have retirement. It's just it's the only job I know of that is for life.
Yeah,
and unless you quit, but I don't know. Someone needs to look at that. But that's not my.
No, it's not our job, unfortunately. Otherwise, it would be different than it is. But we just have to kind of, I guess, make the best of it. And like you always say, Rita, what is it that you always say? You get your selves out there and vote, 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 vote.
Yes, vote. Go out there and vote for everything out there. Because
in order for us to keep the country on track, we need to elect people who are going to vote in favor of rights for the underserved.
You're right. We need people that are looking at all of us.
Yes. Yes.
And not discriminating against one or the other. But so anyway, so that did not make me happy. But
no, I agree with you.
But I think my mood will change as we introduce our guests.
Yes, it will. And Romy Nordlinger, welcome to the show.
Thank you. What a pleasure this is.
I feel that we need to address the success of your own career before we talk about the play, because you're very, very successful yourself, writer, director, producer. You do voiceover work. You're an actress, very successful, been on a lot of shows, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen you. And one of the reasons that I wanted to say that, because the play that you wrote, The Garden of Allah, is it Nazimova?
It's Nazimova, and everybody has a different way of pronouncing it. I think one day I'll have to do a video of the different pronunciations of Nazimova.
It's such an unusual name. And you know what is kind of unfortunate is I should know how to pronounce that perfectly, because she was a very, very famous and very successful celebrity, movie star, stage actress. And as a matter of fact, your tagline is kind of the most famous star you've never heard of, which I
would just have to say, you shouldn't feel anything bad about not knowing her name. The reason I'm doing one of the reasons is I cannot believe this magnificent woman's story has not been told, and that so many people don't know about her meteoric fame, and the hell of a woman that she that she was, this magnificent story. It's absolutely unprecedented, under the radar, and she was way ahead of her times. So no, people, they walk out of the theater. How have I never heard of Nazimova?
How did you find out about her, or did you always know about her?
No. One of my dearest friends, who actually, sadly, died last week.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. She was very dear to me. And four other friends of hers were all theater people, formed a coalition of sorts to be advocates for her. She never, much like Nazimova, believed that. She only looked for the positive. So she was very sick until the very end, but she never even thought about dying or talked about dying. It was just not an option. So, but we helped her through a lot. It was not for the faint of heart, and it was a labor of love. And it was, to me, the true meaning of ensemble, since we are all theater. I know Mary Lynn was very excited that I would be here. Her name is Mary Lynn Henry. She was the head of casting for ABC, and I might have to figure out if it's ABC or CBS at one time, and then became a theater historian. She just knows everything about theater. She was putting on a production because of all of the theater heritage she knows about some unsung actors and actresses, and she wanted me to write something. She knows I write, and she presented all of these wonderful women, and they're magnificent stories, not as magnificent as Nazimova's, but they were all sort of, I felt like they were sort of consumptive and blonde, and I just didn't really feel, completely drawn. And then she said, I know who, Alla Nazimova. And great casting director, she should know, but also this is a woman who I have some Russian heritage, second generation on my grandfather's side, also Jewish heritage, although I wasn't brought up Jewish, I have to say. I was brought up Unitarian, which is kind of believe whatever you want. But I felt a great kinship to where she was from. She was small and dark like I am, and very much an other in a lot of ways, in the best ways. But that feeling of outsider that I understood, and her story was so magnificent. And then I read a biography by Gavin Lambert, which is like the consummate biography, called Nazimova. And I was so, I could not believe that story has not been told.
I agree with that. It was really, as I looked her up and was reading a little bit about her, and what I find to be particularly fascinating, because in the 1920s, there were some very powerful women in film at the time that, were really, you have Mary Pickford. But, I was thinking that what's really kind of set her apart to me is that, first of all, she was an immigrant coming into the country. And like you say, she came from a Jewish background, and most of the women that were seen that were so powerful in Hollywood at the time were, like you said, kind of blonde from Minnesota, kind of came out to California, were discovered. And this woman came all the way from what is now the Ukraine, I think.
Correct. She's Belarusian and Yalta. Yeah. And Crimea. Yeah. What is now the Ukraine, absolutely. And she also had to flee the Tsarist Russia, and where you could be pogroms and this Pale of Settlement, you could be relegated to these dreadful things. I don't know if I should sort of give you a shorthand version of just the kind of the quick hits of what was so monumental about her. Should I do that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and it's going to be the very, she was a... she had an abusive father. He would beat her. The mother left her, abandoned her sister and brother as well. Nazimova was not Nazimova. She was born Adelaida Leventon. And she started to play the violin. This was after her mother left, and was a prodigy. And then—
How old are we talking at this point?
Good question. I'm probably about 14, 15, 16, possibly. I would have to double check that. Her father broke her arm. No daughter of mine. You are Adelaide Leventon. You will never amount to anything. She wasn't going to play the violin after that, her arm being broken, and she created herself. She named herself. As she said, her greatest role, her greatest transformation was creating the role of Alla Nazimova. She named herself after the heroine in her favorite novel, The Children of the Streets. Then she took to the streets, and some may say she actually had to work. She sold her body. She had patrons of the arts. She saved every cent to get herself.
Can I ask you really quickly, because we're talking about New York at this time, right?
No, this was Russia.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So she was still there. The mother was gone. She was heartbreak. She was passed from abusive foster family to abusive foster family. To get herself out of there, she got herself by living on the streets, doing whatever she had to do, saved every penny, and got herself into the Moscow Art Theater, where she studied under Stanislavski. So this method, this is real acting. He wasn't particularly giving to her either. She saw a good in with this really second-rate actor, but he was very popular, Orleniev. He got her to New York's Lower East Side. They had a theater they founded in the Lower East Side, but she did all the work, made the costumes, balanced the books, scrubbed the theater. And they were a huge sensation, and they only spoke Russian. And then imagine that, Lee Schubert, the biggest producer of all in Broadway, and the Schuberts, you still see all the Broadway theaters, the Schubert organization still exists, offered her a Broadway contract. This was from seeing this Russian girl, magnificent dynamo, she may not speak English, but she spoke the language of the soul. These were some of the reviews. And Schubert said, I'll give you a Broadway contract if you can learn English in 1 year. And she learned it in 6 months. And became an inspiration. They put her under contract. She was doing all sorts of fluffy plays, but really always wanted to do the good ones, Strindberg, Ibsen, Chekhov. After a while, Lee Schubert let her do that. And that became crowds, lines around the block. The Hedda Gabler, all of these great plays. Tennessee Williams said, when I first saw Nazimova perform, she was so shatteringly powerful, I could not stay in my seat. It was then I knew I must become a playwright. Eugene O'Neill said she showed me where true modern theater is, where truth might live. So the reason I say that is then, after making the Schubert so much money, $4 million in sold out runs, which is equivalent to something like $175 million today, they built a Broadway theater, the Nazimova Theater, on 39th Street, right there in Manhattan. And nobody would know it existed. Nobody does know it existed. Not even a plaque. Not even a plaque.
Is the theater still there?
No.
No.
Nothing. Not a plaque, not a theater, not a word, not a sound. The magnitude of the enormity of what she inspired, bringing acclaim to Chekhov, Strindberg, Ibsen, highest paid selling Broadway actress, a Broadway theater named after her. She went too far. I think the Schuberts had a little problem with her sexuality. So she had a very famous Broadway play called War Brides, which was anti-war. It was a huge hit. She pitched it to Selznick at Metro Studios, and it was a huge sensation. They then gave her a salary of $13,000 a week.
Wow.
In 1916, $3,000 more than Mary Pickford. And she continued to make this enormous amount of money and was not happy because she knew she was doing things that were, she wanted to do things that were challenging, which she felt most alive which is what drew me to her also, because it was she felt most alive when she was doing something that mattered to her. She felt melancholic when she was not doing something with meaning or that made sense. So she pushed the boundaries. She somehow had them bankroll the Zimova Productions, which she ran with one of her ex-lovers, Natasha Rambova, with these beautiful Art Deco sets, and cast Rudolph Valentino as Armand Duval. And then he ran off with Natasha Rambova. But at any rate, it was didn't make that much money. It was a little bit out of the ordinary. She never was one to, she just played by her own rules. Then she really pushed the envelope. She put $350,000 of her own money into Salome by Oscar Wilde. He was always an inspiration to her. She played the 14-year-old Salome at 42 years old, so she was jeered at about that. But it is considered, it is so wild. If you see this movie, it's wilder perhaps than, you know, it's considered the first art film. Imagistically, content-wise, so they consider it one of the first full-length art films. She cast a lot of scantily clad men. They were all said to be homosexual. They weren't all. And so it also got this huge connotation of, oh my God. So it's also known as one of the landmark films in LGBTQ history. And then she lost all of her money. I shouldn't tell you the ending, but all I should say, I will say, the way she dealt, I'm not going to tell you the very ending because I don't want to ruin the story for the audiences, but the way she dealt with losing everything was not, it was with great, her inner belief was so strong. Her inner life was not about what people thought of her. She said, life is what you make of it. If you don't bend, you break. And she just found, she went back to theater. She went back to Chekhov. She was not well off. She had her last remaining lover, Gleska Marshall, her last abiding partner to the very end, who actually hid away her autobiography because the Marshall family became very, they were very strict after Nazimova died. They were very conservative and were embarrassed of the relationship between Gleska and Nazimova. So there's a lot of hidden subterfuge. So at any rate, what she faced, the adversity and how she faced it, that was really the core of this woman, her doing Nazimova. She also had the Garden of Allah, Sunset Boulevard, the end of the line where it all began. And it was host to the greatest never-ending party of the 1920s and 30s. And it's easier to say who didn't check in than who did. The Camelot of Hollywood. And it was a place of liberty for everybody. Largesse, fun, hedonistic pleasure, liberty for the great writers, producers, the stars, the star-studded cast. I mean, again, it goes, the list goes on and on, and also was home to this, it became this term, the sewing circle, which is, what is that, a euphemism for a code for an all-women's gathering, lesbian gathering, of which Tallulah Bankhead was one of the star members, and so many stars. These were the sewing circles on Sunday afternoons, and yes, nobody sewed a stitch, although they probably were wearing a stitch. And I say, you could really see the stars come out at night there at the Garden of Allah. It was just a place of real liberty. And just to circle back really quickly, although she did have a production company and did direct this wild, beautiful, untamed piece, Camille and Salome, she had to have a pseudonym. She had to write under the name Peter Winters. And she had a lavender marriage with Charles Bryant, who was also known to be gay. They had a lavender marriage to end this incessant chattering about their sordid ways of life. And it's really hard to see in the credits, directed by Charles Bryant. written by Peter Winters. So even as far as she got, there was still this undertone of, ugh.
Yeah, she had a lot of restraints to work in the boundaries of. And don't you think that her childhood, the trauma of her childhood, really strengthened her to be able to manage going to Hollywood and dealing with the successes and failures of Hollywood?
I think it's a great observation. It's very much her core. And it is the kind of thing that either destroys you, and you just go inward and you're hateful. And although she was very grand, she was a very giving and emotionally a very, her core of love and needing to do something that mattered, the human condition, exploring the human condition. And that was another thing that I felt a strong affinity with her for, because I always feel when I'm not doing something that really, to me, matters, you know, I can get very melancholic. She also had that sort of Russian melancholy, but she felt very strongly about doing things that mattered, and the money would come. She did Nazimova. That's what she did. When she went to the Garden of Allah at 8080 Sunset Boulevard, that was the end of the line. None of the stars were living there. And she built this mansion there. She designed it. It was way off the beaten path. And I guess she thought, hey, I'm here. You all come along if you like, but I'm doing me. And boy, did they ever.
She was an independent woman. That's for most certain.
Yes.
And, you know, lived by her own, rules.
That's
right.
Okay. And when people see the show, I think that's one thing that I feel most people, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. And now more than ever, when they're trying to rewrite and or take away stories till we only have sort of the straight white man story, when people see that she could do this during her time, but alone and without a Twitter account, still believing in herself, regardless of all, damning the torpedoes, people walk out very empowered. It's also the story, classic story of the underdog. And I think it's important that we take back our history now more than ever, you know?
Well, I think what's so significant about this and so timely before we wrap up is that she had to live within the constraints of a woman of her time. And we now are going through a period in our country where women are being forced into living within the constraints that they have been, in a sense, dictated to. And there's that juxtaposition of, you know, women being oppressed, but still striving to move ahead and achieve and accomplish. And she was certainly a perfect example of that. And I did want to say, too, that, you know, you were talking about the movie Salome, and you're going to actually screen Salome after one of your performances.
Correct. And it is the 100-year anniversary of Salome. So it's quite an auspicious. I can't wait to see people's reactions to this movie. I've never seen it with a whole group of people because it's that out there. It wow. is really something. We'll be screening Salome, I believe the first Saturday. So that would be the 8th after the show. And then we'll be screening Camille with Rudolph Valentino the following Saturday. And both of those are her productions. Yeah.
So you're not screening the movie after every performance or just certain performances?
No, just after just those two.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I was looking at 8080 Sunset Boulevard and Laurel Canyon goes right into it, right under to the corner of Sunset and Laurel Canyon and Crescent Heights. So right there. So that's where her hotel was. And obviously it's not there now, but I was curious to know what the exact location was.
Right. And it's amazing that I think the show encapsulates a lot of my feelings about that we are walking along, history is right there under our every step, driving by this place every day, and not realizing the enormity of what happened there, of our own history, of and as you were mentioning, Ralph, particularly now when women's rights are, they're going back, we're going backwards. They're trying to take away. My mom was a famous feminist, Zelda Nordlinger in Richmond, Virginia. Actually, Roe v. Wade was one of her most important helping to do that, to get it passed. If she could see what is happening now, she would not believe the way we've gone backwards. And another interesting thing about that time was there was a little bit more of a leniency with sexuality, believe it or not. There was a little bit more of a largesse and a feeling of, you know what, let them do what they do. Let everybody, we just, we want them in the film, this kind of thing, until you become vilified for it, as she did. But she never considered herself, she was very androgynous, much like my husband, who considers himself they, and finally has been able to come out as non-binary. And it's been a great relief. But I think Nazimova never, she said, I don't go to bed with a man or a woman. I go to bed with their essence and their talent. She never had to pigeonhole herself. And I feel like there's a great deal of liberty and freedom in that. And it's the same way. It's like she just was herself. So yeah. That's the lesson right there.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. You can tell that you have a tremendous passion about her and her life. And I know that comes through in your performance on stage. Very excited to see that.
Thank you. Yeah.
And it's not playing for that long. You're playing from July 7th to July 23rd.
Correct. And it's just Fridays through Sundays.
Those 3 weekends.
Those 3 weekends. And there will be a party after for anybody that's at the show, or you can just come to the after party. There's a 1920s party after the show with cocktails, 1920s cocktails on the 7th, on the opening night as well. So that should be extra fun. And I so hope you all will be there as well.
Yeah, I'm just reading about her, and it's just so fascinating. Yeah. And I just wish I knew about her, and I don't. And so...
I know. Nobody.
Yeah. Well, we do
now.
Now
we can. Now yes. We can.
Ralph and I are educated now, and so is our listeners. So,
well, I thank you for giving me the opportunity. And, you know, to add to what they're doing to women, look at what's going on with trying to take away books, taking away LGBTQ studies in the schools.
Well, it's not just it's not just LGBT. They're taking away a lot of other history from other groups that have been persecuted.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're in this now more than ever. We have to tell these stories and know. Wait a second. This is where we came from. We can do it again. We just have to work hard, tell stories, and let. Hopefully, I feel lastly that this. I would like people to feel when they walk out that they can tell their own stories, and that every story matters. But I mean, it's not going to, that's grandiose. Well,
but we all have a story. We all have our story. Okay, so this is I should mention, this is, as we said, it's from July 7th through July 23rd. It's at Theater West, which is at 3333 Cahuenga Boulevard West in LA. That's near Universal Studios.
That is, it's near the Garden of Allah, 4 miles away, which just gives me the chills. And absolutely awe-inspiring.
Romy, we can't thank you enough for sharing Allah's story with us. We hope we
get
the very best of luck with the run of the play.
Thank you.
Again, thank you so much for sharing that with us. We really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Forward to seeing you.
So much fun. And thank you. I really enjoyed meeting you all too.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Bye. You too. Bye-bye. Once again, we were talking with writer, director, actress, Romy Nordlinger.
I do want to add before we go that it is pledge drive here at KPFK. and every little bit helps. And if with your support, we're able to stay on the air. So if you can, please make a donation to kpfk.org. And then up in the corner, you'll see a donate button.
And we want to hear from you.
Like us on our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, or email us at theoutagenda@gmail.com. I'm Rita Gonzalez.
And I'm Ralph Radabaugh. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful week.
And remember that being out is the first step to being equal. Now stay tuned for This Way Out.